is the Becoming Epic Podcast. Becoming epic. Epic isn't a word that we're just saying. Becoming epic. Every person is courageous. Fitness became a blessing. It's my secret weapon. I'm living every second, motivating you to become epic.
Welcome back to Becoming Epic Podcast. My name is Adam Berezowski, and I am your courage coach. So I am super excited for this week's episode, which I think I say that every, I don't know, you listen to my podcast every week.
I do listen to your podcast.
But I do have a wonderful guest on today. His name is Paul Carrion. I met him about a year and a half ago, and his story is just awesome. What he does in his endurance world is awesome. What he does in his fatherhood life is awesome. And I wanted to bring him on and just learn more about him, because I think with everything that he's gone through, everything that I've gone through, we could develop and bring some good value. So welcome, Paul Carrion.
Thank you for having me.
Did I say that your last name right?
Carrion, but you can say
I ain't gonna do that. I ain't got that with it. All right, so let's get to know you. So let's talk about you and where you're from and what brought you here, because he's a did you come right to California?
Or? Yep. Oh, okay. So I moved, we moved to the United States, California, Simi Valley, actually, when I was 17. So about 30 years ago.
Jesus. Well, we're not aging you, but he's pretty old. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
And so we came from Ecuador. I went to Simi High. I went to Royal for summer school once. And then I went to, more for college. So been here. We landed in Simi Valley and been here ever since.
Interesting. How do you land in such a random town? Like, what brought you to Simi in general?
My dad, he was already here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. It's not like here.
I don't know how he came to Simi, but he was already here.
It's like all of California of all these beautiful spots. I mean, Simi is very gorgeous. I love living here, but and then you land right here. Whatever. Okay, so you came from Ecuador, and your dad was here just like searching for better opportunity.
So I come from a divorced family. My dad actually moved when I was maybe 3-4 years.
Okay.
Went to Chicago first, then he lived in the valley, in San Fernando Valley, when he moved here, and then he moved to Simi, I don't know, at one point in his life.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta get out of that valley, because I get it. Born and raised San Fernando Valley, I could not wait to get out. Awesome. Okay, so you came when you were 17.
Yes, sir. Went to high school.
Awesome.
Big shocker, different. Everything was different. So,
and did you speak any English when you came here, or was it?
A little bit, yeah. Not. I mean, it wasn't fluent, but I did okay. So we obviously came. English is my second language. So I have a twin brother. So that was it was great because we had classes together and we were together. So it wasn't a lonely road in school at the beginning.
Oh, that's good. And why can't I forget? What's your brother's name?
Pablo.
Pablo. Oldest. Okay, yeah.
And then I have a twin brother, Alex.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know you're a twin?
Yeah.
No kidding. Damn, there's more of you guys out there? Shit, it's crazy. Okay, so you went to high school, and then, I don't know, I'm more infatuated with your endurance story. So let's kind of dive into that.
So I went to high school. When I came out of high school, then I made my wife, we got married. I had kids when I was, 27. I had my first son, and then I have twins, a boy and girl.
And you have twins? Jesus.
So all through that, for quite a while, I wasn't into any sports, any endurance. Through high school in Ecuador, we were active kids, but not really doing anything. And when maybe 10, 12 years ago, my brother, Alex, he started running marathons and riding his bicycle. Then he met a group of triathletes, I want to say maybe 12, 14 years ago. And he kept on bugging me, but I was busy with the kids, doing kids' activities and stuff. I was focused on work and family, and I wasn't doing anything. So finally, I gave in. I started riding my bike. Bought a bike, changed my bike, got a new one. we would ride with my dad and my two brothers. Then I started doing centuries riding. This is 2012, 2013. And then I started running in 2014. I did the LA Marathon, I think it was 2014. And soon after, I started doing triathlons. And that was a rabbit hole that went into doing a lot of endurance. I did half Ironman, the full Ironman. I went to Alaska, did an extreme triathlon there. 2019, I also did a swim run, which was
called Aquathon.
No, it's actually, so you swim run is awesome. I did it in Washington in Orcas Island. It's, you pretty much run and swim several times with, you have to carry the same gear as you're swimming when you run. So you, it's a half wetsuit. You run on your wetsuit. Usually it's in trails.
I think I've heard about this, and you were like swimming from like section to section, yeah. Like swimming, running, yes. Swimming. Correct. I've heard of that.
And it's, they actually do it in Catalina Island as well. So, it's a bucket list for me.
All right.
And you do, so there's two, you do it with a partner. So both of you guys have to be together. You're tethered together. Or you do solo. Solo is usually shorter distance, but if you want to do the full distance, then you do with the partner. So you guys are swimming. Usually one pulls the other one in the swim, the other one is pulling on the run.
Jesus.
And it's usually trail running, so you're climbing. You're it's a very cool experience.
Yeah. Interesting. So like, what got you? Because like, obviously with your brother doing it, like, where was your fitness level? Were you already in shape? Did you kind of do it and start to wanting to lose some weight or get in better shape?
I wasn't heavy at the time. You know, when you're young, you're kind of like, you could eat whatever and it just goes.
I call it the seafood diet. You see it and you eat it and yes, do whatever you want. Yeah.
But I wasn't active in any sports other than just playing with the kids. In cycling, I got into cycling. It was really fun. You know, started doing 100 miles, climbing all these Santa Monica Mountains, Big Bear, like doing a lot of road cycling. And I really enjoyed it. I liked it. Obviously, when you're doing a lot of endurance, you're not gaining weight. You're staying fit. We were riding lots of miles all the time. So I think I was good and healthy until pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I was very involved in activities with the local trail running community as well. We would volunteer and go run. I mean, it's crazy. My brother Alex has done 100 milers, so we will go for 20, 30 mile training runs like every weekend when he was doing this thing. So I thought it was fun, and it is fun. But when the pandemic hit, then with no events and, you know, everything shut down, then I kind of mentally stopped training, stopped doing things physically, and I gained some weight, you know. Enjoy eating during the whole time a lot. I also enjoy camping, so I would camp and do things, but I really kind of like completely stopped doing a lot of activities, and it was just for like fun, but a lot shorter distances and just fun. So anyways, the weight crept in, and I couldn't get out mentally and physically out of the hole, and that's what brought me to Epic.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and my brother Pablo had been here before, and he actually lost a lot of weight when he first came in the first time, and I kept on asking him. So I actually told him if he could come with me, and we came the first time. We sat down with you, and
yeah.
I Then that was the first time, and I haven't left. Yeah. You haven't been able to get rid of me.
And I'm hoping that I never have to. Well, it's funny because, like, you know, I look at the endurance world as it's like a drug, right? And especially in above marathons, because they say like 1% of the world or 1% of the population like runs a marathon. But like you go even into the bigger distances, you're talking a much smaller community, but like you're talking like those people chase insane. I mean, you said it yourself. I mean, you, how many Ironmans have you done?
I actually only done one full Ironman. I done one extreme triathlon. I have done 12 half Ironmans.
Okay.
And a bunch of Olympic and sprint distances. I don't know how many. I have run up to 50 miles. I have done 50 miles. I have done 30Ks, 50Ks. I've run a lot just for fun, not racing, just yeah. going out and running for fun.
Totally.
The longest cycling distance I did, they still have it. It's called the Mulholland Challenge. It's 125 miles, and you're climbing like, you used to climb like 16,000 feet of climbing. So, yeah, it was
gross.
That was
Jesus.
Longest, hardest day in cycling. But
is that the Mulholland Highway?
Yeah, you pretty much climb everything, and you go in all the peaks and valleys.
Jesus.
It's a long day on the road.
Yeah. You know, I love cycling. Well, I love all endurance. And I started cycling. So a little bit of backstory. When I was 8, I used to work for a bike shop. And I started working there for parts because I wanted to save my money for a bike. And I was 8, so they're not going to like pay me. So they ended up paying me in bike parts. So I built my first BMX bike. I was 8. Yeah, and then I actually worked there till I was almost 18 on and off for like the winter, like during Christmas time, to just build bikes and stuff. And I've been into cycling my whole life. And after doing my Ironman, the training volume that is involved with that type of distances, like 100 miles, things like that, especially in California, like you're on the roads, it is not safe at all. And I honestly can't remember the last time I was on a bike after my Ironman, and that was 2017, just because the amount of distances that you can cover, how far you go. I mean, we're lucky enough that we live in Ventura County. You go north, the roads are a lot safer than going into LA. But I do love riding, but there's just like so much involved with it.
Well, that's why, so also some time ago, I got into gravel riding, mainly because of how unsafe it is to ride on the roads. And gravel is kind of like a road bike with some
dirt tires. Yeah.
So, and I just actually got a really great, beautiful bike.
I know.
For my birthday.
I saw.
Gravel bike. So, riding, it's, you know, you go long distances, but there's not too many fire roads, but there's some fire roads. I actually, in a while back, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I did a bike pack trip in Washington. Went from Seattle to Spokane.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. It was 4 days of just bikepacking with a group of friends. It was a really cool experience. And it was mostly, I want to say 90% on fire roads or off the roads.
And that's where you have like your little satchels on the side, right? You have like your tent and your little sleeping pack or whatever. And dude, that's awesome.
We would stop and buy some food in markets and cook once we get to camp, side of the road, put your tent. And we did do some, one night we stayed in a hotel, the rest was just campgrounds.
Yeah.
Really incredible adventure. I would actually recommend that. I want to go back to doing some more backpacking.
Yeah. I mean, I see people, when I go north, we had a family friend of ours that had a house in Cambria, and we would drive like the one going up to Cambria, and always you'd see like bike packers and stuff that are cruising up the entire coast of California. And
yeah, the highway one is great for doing some of that bike packing.
Yeah. And you're on basically the beach, the most of the way, not all the way, but the most of the way. There's just, you know, I haven't tried gravel riding. I've only done road riding, mountain biking, and I like mountain biking. But again, my sport's running. It's just the easiest. Throw on some shoes, go out, and that's all you need versus everything else.
I'm also I consider myself a runner as well. It's like, it's the best feeling, just some shoes.
Yeah.
Your Garmin.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, I always say, if you find me on the ground, just pause my Garmin.
And you're just out running.
Yeah. No, and I think, like, you know, that, in my opinion, that's what deters a lot of people from, like, trying new sports, especially here in California. Like, yes, there's some great bike paths, but there's, like, if you want to get into some, like, distance riding, there's not, like, one safe area to ride. Like, I know that there's, in Washington, there's a lot of, like, cool bike paths and, like, bike-friendly areas. I know in Texas, there's a lot of, like, open land and open areas that you can ride where, you know, it's a little bit more active. But I think that that's a good thing that – or not a good thing that deters people away from starting things. It's just because it's unsafe. You know, like, riding on the roads, people texting. This one time during training, we rode from – basically my gym to the Ventura Pier and back. So it's round trip. It's like 100 miles. And it wasn't too bad being out in, like, the farmland of, like, Camarillo, Oxnard, that area. But then, like, coming back, like, we took the Somas Highway.
118.
Yeah. The 118. And it was so sketchy because there's, like, a small, very small bike lane and you're on there in the big rigs. Yeah. And it's like, and that's a thoroughfare for all the big rigs to go into, like, Ventura, the city of, and beyond. And that was the most unsafe I've ever felt. And, like, I ride around here locally, Moore Park, all these cool little areas. But to get that long distance in, like, no, it's just, to me, it's not worth it to die for my bike.
It's true. It's unfortunate that every time we go on the road riding, you feel like you might not come back.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, but it's also like on the other side of things, it's kind of a thrill too, right? It's like you're out there. And the other thing that I really don't like is the people that are, like, anti-cyclists. Like, when you have a big group of people out there riding, it's like you know they're inconveniencing the person that's driving because they're taking up some of the roadway, but it's safer that way. And then people just don't understand that, like, there is etiquette, right, on the roads. And if you have a big group of people and they're taking up a lane, like, it's so much safer than all of them in one big line on a small bike path. And,
correct,
you know, and it's like, all you do is get honked at or flipped off, or
water bottles get thrown.
Yeah. Been there, done that. Okay. So let's talk about the pandemic a little bit, because, you know, to go from a bunch of years of racing and running to then dealing with the pandemic, because that was a huge shock for everybody. I know that I've seen it on my end where you either grew or you died, in the sense of, like, you either got in better shape or you got in worse shape. And there was, like, really no staying the same. So let's talk about a little bit.
Well, I think I fall on the second one, or maybe I was hibernating.
Hibernating. We were reworking the inner workings underneath the layer.
It's something like that. So, for me, signing up for races is really a motivation to train. There's people that could just train year round, you know, swim, bike, run with no races. For me, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
When I sign up for a race, then I, like, put it on my calendar. I have Training Peaks, my hire a coach, and then just, like, get to work and put in the time. But with the pandemic, not having any races, I did a little bit of e-sports. That's online type of thing, but it wasn't my thing. The bigger part for me on the endurance is spending time with people out, whether it's triathlon or gravel riding, camping, trail running, you know, you get to spend time with other humans and really enjoy that. So not having that was hard for me. Seeing, you know, how kids are struggling with not going to school, trying to stay active, do things. It was just tough. I don't know. I hope we never have to go through anything like that ever again.
But even with, like, your work, so you're in the restaurant industry, correct, so I'm sure that took a major hit just as much as, like, fitness did.
Correct. Well, it was just a lot of stress. And part of, also, I had to spend more time focusing on work, mm-hmm, because of all the issues that came with the pandemic.
Adapting to all the protocols and whatever.
ever changing
and still probably changing. Yeah, right. it's so crazy.
So that was hard. Like I said earlier, I did gain some weight and wanted to lose it. I tried dieting. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what to do. So, because I saw the success that my brother had, I wanted to come to Epic. So I came in first day and everyone was so welcoming. I really felt, it was a little intimidating because I'm clueless sometimes with the name of the workout. So, like I always have to ask the wonderful staff here,
yeah.
How do you do this?
Yeah.
That's intimidating a little bit because, you know, you go in and everybody, most people are like, they know what Russian deadlift is. And
yeah. Like, RDLs, you know, standard deadlifts, squats, and yeah. Breakdancers. Everybody's got different names for different things.
Yeah. So, but anyhow, I got comfortable. I really started enjoying the people, the classes that I was taking. It worked. It was good. I wasn't losing weight the way I wanted. And I met the nutritionist here. Wonderful Rachel. Thank you.
Wonderful Rachel. We could name drop her all day long. Yeah.
And so I started working with her sometime last year, maybe October.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like magic.
Yeah.
She has the secret.
She does. She is a coach unlike no other that I've ever met. And not only, you know, in the grand schemes of life, everybody knows how to eat healthy. And I'll use my quotations because like fried foods versus grilled foods, whatever, right? Veggies versus potato or veggies versus French fries, you know. And there's a lot of, she's actually probably going to be here any minute. But there's a way of doing nutrition, you know, that's different for everybody and every skill set. And let's talk about your little friend that you had with you. I don't know if you remember. So he had, so when Paul came in, he had, can I say it?
Absolutely.
Okay. He had like the world's biggest hernia and it was like
my stomach.
Yeah. In his stomach. And it was like a little monster. Like what was the movie where the little aliens would come out of the stomach? but whatever. So yeah, you started working with Rachel, you started dropping some weight and then you end up having the surgery.
I did have the surgery, to a hernia repair and I'm not going to go into details, but prior to this, 7 years ago, I had another hernia repair that didn't go so well. So I had an allergic reaction to the mesh. And that's why I didn't want to. I know it wasn't attractive. Opposite to that. And but finally, with times evolving and all that, I felt like it was time to maybe try it again. I was a little afraid.
Well, especially if you had a bad experience. Yeah. And my dad actually, too, he had one of the, like when the meshes started coming out and they put the mesh over it, his failed the first time.
Yeah. I spent some time in the hospital because I had an infection and anyhow, I didn't want to go through that. It wasn't pretty. So, I had it. I didn't come to the gym for maybe like a month.
Yeah. Something weeks. Like that. Yeah.
And then I came back, but that also helped. I felt good after. I felt strong in.
So what, like through working with Rachel, what are some of the key things that you've learned? Because obviously being in endurance, nutrition is huge, right? If you don't have gas in your tank, you ain't going anywhere. I've learned that time and time again, the hard way. So like working with a coach, let's talk about that a little bit of like, what did you learn? And we might add that he is also vegan.
That was a challenge for Rachel.
Yeah, definitely a challenge for any nutrition coach. Sure. But like the things that you have applied to like your day-to-day life, because you know, you're not defined by you being an athlete. You're a father, you have a job, you work. So what are the things that you have changed from pre-pandemic to now? And like, how does that look like?
Well, so going back to Rachel, I learned to actually to eat proper. I think when we started, I wasn't eating as many calories as I needed to. And obviously, I wasn't tracking my calories. I wasn't tracking what I was eating. I was just eating. So you thought, you said, you did say that I was vegan. So I am. And when I became vegan about 8 years ago, I actually learned to use food as nutrition and not have any emotional attachment to the food, because we eat, you know, people say we celebrate and then we eat unhealthy and we go eat the worst food that we could have our body. So I learned, and that was a big game change for me, was turning the switch on that I eat mostly to get nutrition, to kind of like fuel my body for the endurance sport that I was doing. So working with Rachel, I learned how to use macros, because I was just eating, and most vegans probably eat a lot of carbs mostly, but she helped me figure things out, and I feel really good. I lost some weight. I lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, you did. It was like overnight too. Well, it felt like overnight for me. Maybe not for you.
It's actually 6 months, but I feel like actually it was gradually 2 pounds, 3 pounds a week. It wasn't like these magic diets that make you lose 10, 15 pounds 1 week and you're right back at it. So it's been 8, 9 months. I'm still feeling really, I feel really good. I feel the best I have felt.
Yeah.
I continue to come to Epic 3 or 4 times. I just recently changed work, so it's a little challenging. I'm adapting to my new schedule. I still have to figure things out. But yeah, it's learning how to use macros. I don't track my food daily anymore, but I have a pretty good understanding on the calories that I eat daily. And also when I'm going out for 6, 7 hours on my bike, then I feel a little different. Just so I don't bonk. She helped me figure things out as far as to what, how to properly, get the nutrition days before you go on big rides and, or any big endurance event. And, It's been good. I feel really good. I could ride my bike. I could go run for a few miles.
A few. Yeah, this guy. Well, I think like, you know, working as a coach and then seeing the successes and like what people use, right, as education. Because like as a coach, in my opinion, it's to teach you how to do it yourself versus you needing me for the rest of your life to like help you. And, you know, in my opinion, you're like the perfect client, because it's like you learned quickly, right? You learned that you were under eating, which most people do. And then, you know, taking that separation, I love the way you said it, is like with the celebration of food, right? It's like we're actually punishing ourselves when we go celebrate with food, right? Because it's like, oh, it's your birthday, you go out to dinner, whatever, right? And you tend to eat like crap, like,
perfect. You don't feel good the next day.
And you definitely don't feel good the next day. And, or the day of, like last weekend or whenever I did the Spartan Big Bear, you know, fiasco, I was like, oh, I can eat pizza. And I haven't had pizza in, I don't know, probably 12 months, probably even longer than that. And I had 3 slices of pizza and I was up all night long. I was so uncomfortable. I've never felt like crap, but it tasted good. Right. Yeah. But it's like, you know, once you're in a state of learning proper nutrition. And I always say like learning proper nutrition, because it is different for everybody. But it's, you know, once you're there, like there's really no going back, you know, cause it's like knowing that you under eat, knowing what macros are. And for those of you that don't know what macros are, they're basically, it's the things that we track as nutrition coaches, carbs, fats, and proteins, and that's it. So making sure that people are eating enough protein, eating enough carbohydrates for energy, protein to rebuild muscle mass, and fats for like the heart
and
healthy
when
stuff.
To eat. When you need more protein or more carbs or even more fat.
Totally. Yeah. And the timing, right? Timing is huge. You know, when to eat, like if you're going out for a 6 hour bike ride, like you're not going to do it off of like a half a bagel, you know, like you're going to eat some carbohydrates A, the night before and B, that morning of, so that way you can have some energy out there. And, you know, that, and that's where, you know, my, there's a lot of people in my life that are like, oh, like that kind of make fun of me the way that I eat, because they're just very unhealthy and naive. But then they're like, oh, they always talk about like, I'm going to like the, my tortillas. I always talk about my tortillas. I do the carb free, the low carb tortillas because yeah. A, they're delicious, great. But I have a lot of them. So it's like, I might as well just have a normal tortilla, but I'd rather have two. So it's better. But then they're like, oh, but it's the low carb, you know, and they're always talking about low carb, low carb, low carb. It's they're overweight, they're obese, you know, and then they're sitting there eating potato chips and talking shit about my low carb tortillas. And so it's like, you know, people just don't get it, yeah. You know, and like as a nutrition coach, like to then teach somebody to get it, right? And especially a vegan to get it with the amount of protein that you need in order to build and maintain muscle mass. And then your energy levels, carbohydrates, you have no problem with, I'm sure. And then,
but it's also having good carbohydrates.
Totally. Yeah. And understanding what good carbohydrates and then what type of energy that they supply as well. You know, so, so let's talk about, because I'm sure there's other vegans that do listen, like what are some of the sources of like protein that you do? Cause I know that that's a big,
great. So I do actually, and I learned this with Rachel, I do supplement amino acids because there is some that are not found on any vegan protein. I get my protein from plants.
Yeah.
it sounds dumb, but like lentils and beans, tofu, just...
yeah, and everything else that you eat. Okay, so you supplement with some amino acids, then what about like
protein powder as well? I do protein shakes. I add protein to my coffee.
Okay, now what? So like on a given day, especially you being as tall as you are, and where you are, how many grams of protein do you generally intake?
180.
Damn. And so with, so that's between your tofu. Your lentils.
Yeah, correct. And nowadays, there's a lot of alternative meats that come with protein, like the Impossible Beyond. Mm-hmm. So I work in restaurants, and usually I eat in the restaurants that I work. And that's usually the only vegan alternative that I have. So I mostly every day I will have a Impossible or Beyond whatever burger, and but no fries for me.
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, because I know that with the Impossible meats and stuff like, because that's all pea protein.
Yep, pea protein,
right? And then because I know pea protein's definitely getting more popular out there versus like the soy protein, and because like soy has a lot of like acids to it, but also has a lot of like kind of negative side effects as well.
I also found there's in local markets, there's alternative spaghetti. So instead of having pasta, they have bean spaghetti or edamame spaghetti that has a lot of protein.
I've been doing the chickpea.
Yeah.
The chickpea pastas. Those are really good.
Yeah. And it's a flavor that you acquired. You know, most people, when they first eat it, it's, you're expecting something and it's not. It's something different, but it tastes really good. I do this, they have a pasta sauce at one of the local markets that it's full of vegan protein. So it's doable. You just, again, working with the nutritionist, there's a lot of videos, there's a lot of YouTube, there's a lot of information on the internet. The problem is that no one is following up with you. You're checking and no one follow up. So that's why a lot of people fail on their journey, because you can do it by yourself, but you have to do a lot of research, and you have to, you're gonna get lost.
Yeah,
you're gonna fall and you're gonna have to get up. But working with a nutritionist or working with a group of people, it's a daily feedback. It's constantly guiding you. It's like a road map. They're just, you know, we're so used to the GPS on the car. Yeah. Like the same thing. It's just they're guiding you and you're going to get to your goal.
Yeah, I think, you know, having that map, right, is, I think, a key to success. There are so many people that just don't have the discipline to do it themselves. And, like, I love that word. Discipline is, like, on, it's in my top three words that I use besides courage and epic. But, like, because, yeah, I mean, there is so much information out there. You can download whatever program from Dr. Google, but if you don't have the accountability and the person that, like, supports you through it, that is going to check up on you, 90% of the people do fail, you know? Right.
And also the other thing that it's very important is it has to come from you. Mm-hmm. Mm. If you want to change, it has to be you from within that want to do the change, that want to be healthy, that want to come to the gym and start feeling good. It's a journey. Mm-hmm. It's a process. You have to be patient. It's not going to happen overnight. A lot of people want to see results right away, and it's not going to happen. But once that switch is on in you, then you're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
The coaches are here to support and to help, but it has to be you, because you could tell me every day, you could pick up the phone and call me, but if it's not clicking on me, it's just not going to happen. It's you know, that pizza is gonna look good every night.
Amen to that. Well, it's kind of like those people that are like, okay, here's what to eat, here are your macros, and then they're sending me exactly what I want to see, but then they're actually doing the exact opposite. So I've worked with people like that before, where it's okay, all the numbers are matching up. You're hitting your macros. You're moving. You're this and that. And weight's still not falling off. Okay, like, what's really going on? You know, and you start digging in a little bit. And then they're, like, realizing that they're actually not following it. Because they're just...
inaccurate tracking, I call it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. And I like the fact that you say you don't track anymore. Because for as much as tracking is super important, it shouldn't be a habit you do every day and the rest of your life.
I'm sorry, Rachel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, Rachel. It's important, just like a roadmap, right? You have from A to B, and you know how to get there. But once you're there, you don't need it anymore, because you should know your path. You should know what your body needs in order to sustain that and keep that if your education is right. Going back to it, it all comes down to education based on, that's what I like to promote, because it's like, people come to my gym to lose weight, but they don't stay because they've lost weight. They stay because of the community of people and the education that we provide. And that's like the biggest thing. Like you said it yourself, of why you like endurance is because of the people you've been doing it with, right? You build these relationships, you build this camaraderie, and now you have the same thing just in a gym of like-minded individuals. Not everybody's here running marathons and doing all that stuff, but we're all on the same journey. We just have different destinations. And that's like so important to me and like my culture, because like, did that pizza look great? Hell yeah, it did. Did it taste good going down? It was delicious. But I don't think I'll ever have pizza again because of how shitty I felt after that.
I think the problem there was three pizzas. I think one slice.
I know. I was hungry. I was 9 hours on a race course, burned like 4,000 plus calories. I was done. I was like, I just need to eat and get this food in me. And it was definitely a big mistake. Yeah. But
the other thing I want to share is, you know, that through all my time as a triathlete, every coach always told me that I need to work on core, and you need to go do core and blah, blah, blah.
That's what you hear every time they tell you that.
It never said on me. I never did before. If I had on my calendar to do core, usually during triathlon twice a week, the coaches will put in there, go do some gym or whatever, but it wasn't me. Mm. Now you can't get rid of me. Now I'm here all the time. So,
but then how has that made your endurance in life now?
Like, has it made so it helps, because you know, when you have a stronger core, I mean, you're enduring longer. You could be on, I could be on my bike longer. I could run longer because you have the muscle to support that. Mm-hmm. So I wish I would have listened about 10 years ago.
Yeah. Sorry to all the previous coaches that he has worked with. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I fortunately came from strength training. Well, once I started working out, because I was a fat guy, once I started working out, I started strength training and like bodybuilding first before I got into endurance. And I think I'm very fortunate that I did that because it helped. A, it saved a lot of injuries, right? Because people that just run. And this is why runners have such bad stigma to them, because they don't do legs. They don't do core. They run until their bodies are broken, right? And then it's like, okay, then if they can't run anymore, then they don't do anything. Strength training is the key. It's like building your foundation to everything else. And I'm very lucky that I found strength training to be enjoyable, because not everybody likes it. You know, with our classes here, it's fun. It's inviting. It's fun. You know, we try to keep it energetic. But of how much it plays a role in not just your daily life, but then in endurance, you know, and so many people, when we did Ironman, right after we did Ironman, like everybody that did Ironman stopped coming to the gym and only did Ironmans. Right? Because the amount that a time it takes to train for those events, for one, and for two, because that's all they wanted to do was swim, bike, and run. They didn't want to work out. They didn't want to do core. They didn't want to do strength. And then like some of them got injured, you know, and still injured to this day.
You know, somebody, when you train for Ironman, you know, you learn that the days are longer. You do have the time to train. You do have the time to do all the things. Yep. It's a lot of dedication, and you do choose what you want to do. I mean, you want to sit in front of the TV and just rest, or you want to go out and run. If it's raining, if it's cold, if it's hot, it's 100 degrees. What's your motivation? What's your dedication?
Yeah, it's pretty funny because like I equate to my discipline of like having really no excuse, right? I'm tired. I'm sore. It's cold. It's windy. It's hot. Whatever. And I don't know if I've ever told you the story, but last summer when we had that heat wave, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I would wait till 2 o'clock in the afternoon to go run when it was like 113, 114 out. And one of my employees called or texted me. She goes, "Are you out running right now?" And she was like away to college. And I was like, "Yeah, why?" She goes, "Oh, my mom just texted me." And she's like, "Oh, there's some crazy guy out here running right now. What the hell? What is this guy doing?" She's like, "It's probably Adam." And so she texted me, and it was me, right? Because, like, you know, I understand, like, there's the, what do they say? There's the pain of regret. Damn it, there's that quote. Whatever. But like, I don't want to have to, I've had so much regret in my life that like, I don't want to miss out on that run because it's too hot. So like, if it's hot, it's rainy. Like I've actually now made it to where I love that more than I love good running weather, because I love that type of like, I don't know, the mental strength or the mental.
You learn.
Yeah.
That your body quits before. No, it's the other way. You're mentally quit before your body.
Yeah, totally.
So you learn to adapt, and you learn that your body is going to tolerate a lot more than what your mind is going to.
Totally. And I think that's why I love endurance, because like, you know, I think I talk about this more than anything, is the fact that we go through so much like emotional pain that like that we don't even understand like how long we're going through. I mean, you could be going through something super hard in your life for months on end, right? And it's just another day in your life, versus somebody to think to run a marathon in 4 hours is batshit crazy. I'm like, to me, I'd way rather run a marathon in 4 hours and deal with some of the emotional things that I've gone through in my life. You know,
it's because that's your escape.
Totally. It is. It is.
When you run, it's like you're free.
Totally.
I always say when I ride my bike, and I picked this up from my brother, it's like I feel like a kid.
Yeah.
And you know, when you were 10 years old at the BMX park riding bike.
Oh yeah.
You're free.
Yeah.
You're nothing worry you, nothing concerns you. Same when I run, when I bike. It's you're just in your own world, free.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. Is like, you know, is comparing that type of enjoyment to like being free, feeling like a kid again, like especially as an adult. Like I feel like I know I'm physically 38, but like emotionally, I'm like 15, 16, you know, because it's like I just don't want to grow up. Like I want to be a kid forever. Like I want to be able to go out and go like downhill mountain biking in Big Bear. I want to, you know, go out with my friends on a Saturday morning and go for an awesome trail run up to the tractor that we have in town, like, you know, and have those experiences. And, you know, it's like, I do feel like a kid, you know, and I think that that's like, I went to Hawaii a couple weeks ago and I did this awesome hike. It was the Nepali Coast hike. It was like a 9-mile hike to this awesome waterfall. And it's like, if I wasn't in the shape that I was and enjoyed this type of things, I would have never experienced that. And it's like, I feel bad for people that aren't in shape, that don't enjoy those types of things, because they'll never get to see like what beauty is out there like that. And like to equate to like working out, like, oh, that sucks. The pain of working out, like I hate being sore. Like, I love it. Like
that's a good workout.
yeah, totally. For sure. But it's not the fact that I don't feel successful if I'm not sore, right? But it's the fact that I got to see something, I got to do something that like not everybody is capable of doing, is like that just makes my, I want to go adventure more, you know, like, yeah. You know,
And that's, you hit something, you know, for me, endurance has taken me to so many awesome places. I mentioned earlier, I went to Alaska. I swam, bike, run there. I've done Alcatraz. I escaped Alcatraz.
That's awesome.
Ecuador. I did a triathlon in Ecuador.
Oh, so cool.
I went to, something, like I said, Washington, and did Orcas Island. I did the bikepacking up there. It's just incredible. And the places you get to see, the back roads, and, you know, when you're trail running or by whatever you're doing out there, hiking,
yeah,
walking, you get to see, so you get to experience so much of what this world has. Sometimes it's 10 minutes away from traffic and society, and you're like immersed in it,
yep,
in a whole different world, peace, and you can hear the birds. You mentioned in your last podcast that you don't, sometimes you don't listen to the music because you want to hear.
Yep.
I don't like hearing the cars.
I know.
All the traffic, but hearing the birds and the wind and all that, it just it brings back memories of a kid.
Yeah, it really does. And it kind of just, because like, I hate when people go on vacation, like, oh, I have to go back to reality. You know, it's like, it doesn't have to be like that. You know, it's like, you can, you know, for as much as I wanted to stay in Hawaii forever, because it was like, oh, it was not only the most amazing trip, it was beautiful, but it's like, we have so many great things, especially where we live, like within minutes of anywhere you turn, there's mountains, there's like offshoots where it will make you feel like you're not, you can still feel like you're on vacation, you know? And it's so funny. I forgot who I was telling. Somebody in one of my support groups about my trip and how active I was and how many things are like, that sounds miserable. Cause they're like, I just want to sit on the beach and like drink Mai Tais and do all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't think I did that one time there. I ran, I hiked, I biked, I kayaked. I saw every waterfall I possibly could from land and air. You know, I kayaked up this awesome river, which got me addicted, and I ended up buying kayaks. And
nice.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about taking my daughter today to go kayak. But it's like, you know, there's so many things that people just get so wrapped up in their personal life, or like this world is so much bigger than all of us. And it's like, I get to experience all that stuff because my legs and my body allows me to, you know, but it's like, I'm not just blessed. Like, it takes a ton of work, takes a lot of discipline, takes good nutrition for us to be able to do that. So one thing I want to touch upon is you were signed up for this race. I know. I'm sorry. I have to bring this up.
It's all good.
Because people need to hear about this race. Sure. Because you come from Ecuador. You come from – so there's this race. I guess I'll let you explain it because I don't want to butcher it.
I got into Norseman. Norseman is in – Norway, in extreme triathlon, it's the hardest triathlon in the world. I was training for it. It's the bucket list extreme yeah. triathlon, and people tell me, "Oh my God, you pay to do this crazy thing." It's really a very long, tough day at the office.
Yeah,
and
I love that you call it the office.
I was training so for it. Unfortunately, I'm not. I made a decision to not go this year. It's so, you know, you put goals in your life and sometimes you got to learn when not to pursue something when it's not the right time. Right now, it's not the right time. I just got a new job. I made a move and I'm fully committed to my professional life right now, mm-hmm. where I don't have, I'm still training. I just can't put the intensity and the effort that I need to, you know, in order for me to have a good day. So I'm just not going to be able to go, but you know, maybe next year or the following year, if it's meant to be, it's going to happen. It's there, and it's still a goal of mine.
So this Northman, it's a 2.4-mile swim in like
cold water, icy water,
freezing cold water.
You get thrown out of a ferry.
You get thrown off a
and
boat.
It's dark. Yeah, it's you actually wear a light on the back of your head,
so that they can see you.
They can see you. Yeah, and you can see the people that you're following.
Oh my God. And then it's 112. So it's a full Ironman distance,
it's a
right?
Full Ironman distance.
So it's 112 miles on the bike with like 20,000 feet of gain.
Yeah, it's like crazy. You're in the Alps and you're climbing. They have some parts where it's like 30-35% climbing. So
I mean, I'll be off my bike walking.
Yeah.
Like I don't even know if I could, like, shit, I'm tired at 7%.
It's a full marathon, and they have a section that's called the Zombie Hill, which is a 30%, like 4 or 5 miles, where it's like, I mean, hiking a 30% is crazy.
Yeah,
you're not trying to run, but you're hiking, you're walking, but this is after a long day of biking and swimming.
Yeah.
And then you finish in a top of a mountain. The last section, it's a hike. It's no one could run it. So this is where people go. People that does extreme triathlons, their goal is not usually, there is no time goals. It's
just to finish and the experience. Yeah,
to experience and to finish and to try to be the best, to do the best you can that day.
Yeah, I think that there's a different breed, because like knowing about Northman, knowing about like the there's that other stuff like the ultra triathlons where they do like a double day where it's like a 4.4 mile swim, a 200 and something where it's multi-day. Yeah. Which is batshit crazy. But there's things that are even bigger than that people are doing, that's like there's this whole like endurance world that, like, because Ironman is so commercialized, you know, they show the world championship on TV, and the people that do these other extreme ones, these are just like normal folk. Like it's
fun people
for sure. And then to equate all that suffering to then it being fun, you know, cause it's like, you know, there's at the Sahara Desert 240.
Well, not too far from here, there's Badwater 135, which I think will suit you very well.
The Badwater 135, which is, so I have a friend that I met doing, the Ragnar relay races, who has run Badwater a few times. And I believe next year she's looking for a pit crew or for her crew. Yeah. So I might volunteer just to get the experience, but I even heard it's hard for the crew, just as hard as it is for the person.
It's hot.
Yeah. Because it's okay. So if you guys don't know, Badwater Ultra Marathon is 135 miles from the Badwater Basin in Death Valley to the porthole of Mount Whitney at like 8,000 feet. And so you run, and it's in July.
Great. So, and so you start below sea level.
It's 246 feet below sea level. It's the lowest part in the world and also some of the hottest.
Great.
Like they have videos where you crack an egg and it's like sizzling on the ground. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, people say it's shoes melt.
Yep. Yeah, which is wild. And you're running on the white lines. Yeah, I think there's a documentary I saw one time called Chasing the Sun. It's about that race. David Goggins talks about it in his book. He's done it a bunch of times. And you can't just like walk onto a race like that. Just like Northman, like you have to have experience. You have to go through other events to get to these types of events, because they're not going to be responsible if you're just going to go and wing it and be like, all right, bro, good
and
luck.
They usually, they don't allow just the
newbie,
you know, someone that drank the Kool-Aid and it's like, oh, let's do this.
Totally. Totally. And there are those races, right? There's the San Diego one day. Have you heard of that one?
No.
It's like a 4 mile loop, and you do a 4 mile loop for 24 hours.
Okay.
And it depends on how far you get. They have the one in Maine called Last Man Standing. Have you heard of that one?
No.
So it's kind of the similar concept, but it's a 4 mile loop, and then it starts every hour again, and then it's literally until the last man standing. So you could run up to 200 miles. It's crazy. But yeah, it's a whole crazy world out there.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. And then not only that, and I have one of my old running coaches who's part of the Half Fanatics and Marathon Maniacs, which are these groups that like, they do the all 50 states. They do the all 7 continents. Like, she's ran a marathon in Antarctica. Like, it's so crazy. But then to have those types of experiences, it's like, you can't pay all the money in the world to have that, yeah. You know? And like, that's what I mean. That's, I say, for one, I love the suffer of endurance, right? I love getting to like what we call the pain cave, right? It's like, just, we hurt our bodies just to experience these amazing things. But then the adventure behind going to these, you know, other places to do these events.
You get to see the world.
You get to see the world. Yeah. And I think that's so incredible. All right. Well, is there anything else that you want to share? Or, I mean, cause I love your story, you know, from immigrant to then badass to now even epic badass. And
I think that, well, I'm just going to close it with, anything is possible. Mm. You could do whatever you want. It just has to be, it has to come within you, and you got to have some patience and put some grit, daily dedication, find the time and get it done.
Get it done. Well, thank you for joining me. I love your story. I love hanging out with you. 4 days a week is not enough. You should come 5 to 6, 7 days a week so I can hang out with you more, just saying. But if you did get a lot from this episode, I would appreciate y'all. I know I talked about it last week, but to share Paul's story and share the stories of everybody else I'm going to be having on. Next week, I'm going to have a killer episode with a mother-daughter duo, actually, which is going to be super fun. So yeah, please share the story, and I'll always end it the way I do. Every person is courageous.
Thank you for listening to the Becoming Epic podcast. If you're still listening to this, that means you took something away from this episode. Make sure you leave a review and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Becoming Epic. We'll see you next time. Became a blessing. It's my secret weapon. I'm